And the time is 4:59. Stay tuned at 5 o'clock for the KBOO News Outside World Friday nights at midnight. Oh, it's been on the air for over 3 years now.
Yeah.
The KBOO News is brought to you in part by The Way of Health, a not-for-profit health clinic emphasizing internal medicine, including special programs for mental health issues such as depression or anxiety.
Turn your head and cough.
The Way of Health is located at the corner of Southeast Market at 106th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-788-4165.
Bend over.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
Andy Seaton, KBOO News.
For KBOO in Portland, I'm Julie Sabatier.
KBOO's Afifa Amin Shafi reports.
I'm Stephanie Potter, KBOO News.
KBOO's Eduardo Villanderos Fiede has more.
I'm Annalisa Hummel.
And I'm Liam Delta.
This is Maddie Bowden.
I'm Alex Collins, KBOO News.
I'm Michael Newman, KBOO News.
I'm Courtney Dillard, KBOO News.
News, Oregon will begin losing millions of dollars if state health officials don't begin recording the names of HIV-positive patients.
Nearly two-thirds of college students are experiencing sexual harassment, according to a new study.
Ohio may have the largest per capita number of headless motorcycle ghosts.
And then the human cost of occupation in Iraq. As of today, there have been 2,237 officially acknowledged deaths of American soldiers, with as many as 48,000 others wounded. IraqBodyCount.org reports 31,800 civilians have been reported killed by military intervention in Iraq. Last year, the medical journal The Lancet reported as many as 194,000 civilian casualties, not counting Fallujah since the invasion.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 25th, 2006. I'm Brian Pritchett.
And I'm Noah Eaton. Port of Newport commissioners voted 5-0 yesterday against a shipbreaking operation planned for Yakina Bay. The commissioner cited economic, not environmental, concerns. Port Director Don Mann says the commissioners wanted paid bridge enterprises to pay more for site development, dredging, and other startup costs. Mann says investment costs for a startup at the port were higher for the company than first anticipated. The Virginia-based company wanted to turn an area near the tourist-oriented Newport waterfront into its West Coast base for scrapping old ships. This raised the question of whether the coastal city wanted to trade the environmental hazards for jobs. Yesterday's decision brought cheers from the roughly 200 people who turned out to oppose the project.
If Oregon health officials do not start keeping the names of people who test positive for the HIV virus, the state will lose millions of dollars in federal funding. Under the current state policy, the names of people whose HIV tests come back positive are kept for 90 days. After that, the names are replaced with a code that keeps anyone from finding out the identity of those who carry the virus. That is no longer good enough for the feds, according to the Oregon State epidemiologist. Dr. Mel Cohn says the National Centers for Disease Control and Prevention will not accept Oregon AIDS statistics without names attached. Without the change, Oregon would lose $3 to $4 million in federal AIDS treatment dollars. Cohn stressed that names are not passed along to the federal government. Instead, they are kept locally in a secure computer that is not connected to any network. Also, anonymous testing will still be available throughout Oregon for those who want it. Cohn said that keeping the names will give researchers more time to ask infected people about their risk factors. It would also make it less likely for AIDS cases to be counted more than once.
A disgraced former Republican lawmaker is pleading for bankruptcy protection, that to avoid paying election law violation fines. Former Oregon State Representative Dan Doyle and his wife are asking to not pay $130,000 in civil penalties. A bankruptcy judge is hearing testimony and considering the request. The state has objected to the plan, which would free the Salem couple from most debts and block the state from collecting the penalties. Yesterday marked Dan Doyle's first public appearance since he went to jail 3 months ago. Doyle is serving a 10-month sentence in the Marion County Jail, that for falsifying campaign finance reports in his 2002 and 2004 races for the state house.
Alternative energy is getting a boost thanks to a group dedicated to advancing its availability. KBOO's Doug Guidi reports.
Homeowners and business owners in the Portland metro area considering using the sun to power their homes have a chance to study the benefits solar power provides for them. Oregon is taking solar power seriously in midst of record high energy costs and concerns about global warming. Two seminars are coming to the area with the thanks of Energy Trust of Oregon, who are providing information on solar energy power. Keisha Brockman is Solar Programs Manager for the Energy Trust of Oregon. What makes this event so important for eco-friendly Oregonians?
These seminars are intended to be a very brief opportunity for people to come learn how solar systems work, how much they cost, how much money is available in terms of incentives, to be convinced that solar really does work in Oregon, and to also meet some solar contractors that are available to install these systems and can answer a lot of their technical questions and potentially come out and give them a analysis of a solar system for their own home.
Renewable power is generated by net metering, which returns any energy generated but not consumed to the utility for credit on the actual energy bill. The seminars will include presentations from local solar experts on how solar energy works and how much energy can be generated in a residential system, along with information about costs, financial incentives, and tax credits. Keisha Brockman was asked about the expense of installing a solar energy system in the house.
The upfront cost has always been the biggest barrier to solar. I think people have always been interested in solar. But the cost has been a big deterrent. The incentives that are available now are tax-based to a large degree. So if you have the ability to take advantage of tax credits, can recover half or more than half of the cost of the system over time through these incentives.
Oregon likes to see itself as a pioneer in the solar energy market. Oregon has had a tax credit on solar power since 1977, and this year created the Energy Trust of Oregon, a nonprofit organization dedicated to changing how Oregonians use energy by promoting energy efficiency and clean, renewable energy. The state is definitely seeing a resurgence in interest in solar energy. The two free seminars are coming up in February. The first seminar will be held Thursday, February 2nd, 7 to 8 p.m. at Mount Tabor Middle School, 5800 Southeast Ash Street in Portland. The second will be on Saturday, February 25th, from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. at the Montessori School of Beaverton, 11065 Northwest Crystal Creek Lane in Portland. For more information, call 866-368-7878. I'm Doug Guidi, KBOO News.
The federal government has decided to fully reimburse states like California for efforts to help Medicare patients get prescription drugs. New federal drug rules were slow to take effect, resulting in less money for needed medications. The California Report's John Myers reports.
One of Arnold Schwarzenegger's long-standing promises has been to change the financial relationship between Washington and Sacramento. This was the governor 1 year ago this week.
I always said that it will be to collect the native and I become the governor. And we will be pounding on the doors in Washington, and we will be talking to the White House, we will be talking to the legislators back there, and we will be pressing forward, building on the relationship that we have.
Nonpartisan researchers have concluded for every dollar California taxpayers send east, only about 79 cents in federal services come back to the state. Democrats claim that shortchanging adds up to at least $50 billion every year.
And if we got even $5 billion of that $50 billion back, we'd be balancing the structural deficit in our budget.
Democrat John Laird of Santa Cruz is chairman of the Assembly Budget Committee. He says Schwarzenegger's talk of more federal help for California has largely been just that, talk.
Since the governor's been there, I don't think we've gained in federal money. I think we've lost, and the question is do we fight to keep the loss to a minimum when we really should be increasing the return on the dollars we send to Washington?
But the governor's budget advisors disagree. They say he has helped secure more than $50 billion in either federal funds or federal assistance over the last 2 years, including money for everything from highway projects to nuclear fusion research. In many cases, the governor has sought help from California's congressional delegation, the largest of any state, but often sharply divided on both principle and politics. In November, the governor sent a letter to California's representatives expressing his concerns about proposed federal budget cuts. Even so, every California Republican still voted for the cuts. And while some of that money was later restored, Schwarzenegger's advisors say California will still lose an estimated $2.4 billion over the next 5 years. Republican Rick Keene is vice chairman of the Assembly Budget Committee.
We have been, I think, very slow, given the fact that we've got so much representation in Washington right now, particularly in Congress, to coordinate both our activities with what's going on in the federal government. And definitely we could do better.
But the reality is every state wants more federal money.
Every state's governor from Maine down to Florida and all the way out to California is looking for federal dollars of some sort.
Tim Ransdell is director of the California Institute for Federal Policy Research. He says it's unrealistic to expect major changes in federal spending priorities, even with a high-profile governor like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
The chance of making a grand sweeping change to federal formula programs overall is very slim. But small movement on the margins can, in the long run, make a very big difference.
Governor Schwarzenegger has recently said he now realizes the wheels of government turn slowly. That may mean his job as collectinator is not going to end anytime soon. For the California Report, I'm John Myers in Sacramento.
Wild Pacific salmon will become extinct by the year 2100 unless major changes are made. According to the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, that conclusion was announced by scientists meeting today in Portland. At a meeting of the Salmon 2100 conference, President Bush's top environmental advisor said the administration would back a plan to catch fewer fish. The advisor, James Connaughton, also said the administration wants to shut down hatcheries, which are harming salmon who spawn in the wild. Scientists have long criticized hatchery-bred salmon for diluting the gene pool, spreading disease, and competing with wild fish for food and habitat. At the same time, hatchery-bred salmon are less able to survive in the wild. Connaughton did not say how much the administration wants to reduce the wild salmon harvest. He also did not say how many of the 180 federal, state, tribal, and private salmon hatcheries in the Columbia Basin it wants closed. He said change will require collaboration of regional federal regulators, Canada, Oregon, Washington, and Indian tribes. Salmon is an important part of the Pacific Northwest's economy and culture. Their numbers have been severely reduced by a combination of human factors, from overfishing and development to hydroelectric power dams. Since 1991, 26 populations of salmon have been listed as threatened or endangered.
Portland has been listed in third place in a prominent listing of top film markets in the United States. This is the fourth year in a row Portland has made the Movie Maker magazine list, beginning in 2003 at number 9, then to number 8 in 2004, number 5 last year, and this year rose to third place following New York and Austin, Texas. Portland is considered the, quote, best unkept secret by the magazine. In addition to the Oregon Production Investment Fund, qualified productions also have a 6.2% labor rebate available to them. Portland has been so busy that Mayor Tom Potter recently hired a one-stop film permit person to help facilitate permit requests. The article also touts a supportive environment found in Portland, which includes film festivals such as the Northwest Film and Video Festival, PDX Festival, Portland International Film Festival, POW Fest, and the 48-Hour Film Project.
The current time is 5:12, and now, daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
Good God Almighty, is there no one at the Pentagon or in the White House with a brain or a soul? From the beginning of Bush's wretched war in Iraq 3 years ago, our brave troops have been screaming to get adequate armor, both for their bodies and their vehicles. Yet, astonishingly, Bush and the other dunderheads at the top have either ignored, stalled, or fumbled these life and death requests. Now, we are learning what their callousness and ineptness cost. A secret Pentagon report has recently come to light, revealing that up to 80% of the Marines killed in Iraq from upper body wounds would not have died if they had had the proper body armor. Yet the Marine brass did not even begin buying this armor until last September, and more than 90% of the units ordered still have not been delivered to Iraq. Equally disgusting, many soldiers have died because their lightly armored Humvees are easily penetrated by roadside bombs, when an armored truck called the Cougar could have saved their lives. Again, though, the Pentagon only started ordering this truck last May, and delivery to Iraq is 3 months behind schedule. This delay comes because the Cougar contract went to a small, politically connected outfit in South Carolina that had never mass-produced vehicles and botched the job. A dozen prototypes did get to Iraq, but had to be recalled because of failing transmissions, etc. Meanwhile, our blasé leaders dismiss criticism, saying they're doing all they can as fast as can be expected. This is Jim Hightower saying, what we have here is a failure at the very top. If George, Dick, and Rummy really gave a damn about soldiers, such top corporations as General Motors immediately would have been brought into a crash program to meet the needs of our vulnerable troops. Instead of continuing to make $50,000 Hummers for war-evading yuppies, General Motors could have been enlisted to make Cougars, but that would have required leadership from a real president. Today's commentary is made possible in part by the good folks at Mother Jones Magazine. Over the years, Mother Jones has won just about every award available while ticking off the honchos of business and government. They're proud of both distinctions. Find out more at MotherJones.com.
Stay tuned for independent Native news following our newscast. And at 6 p.m., hear the underground. At 7, it's nonstop hip-hop with DJ Audio. Tonight's weather, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain, lows 35 to 40. Tomorrow, a chance of showers, highs around 45. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News, Portland, Corvallis, Vancouver, and Hood River.
Three environmental activists suspected of sabotage have been indicted by a federal grand jury on a charge of conspiracy to damage and destroy property by fire and explosives. United States Attorney McGregor Scott announced the one-count indictment against 28-year-old Eric McDavid, 20-year-old Zachary Jensen, and 20-year-old Lauren Weiner. The U.S. Attorney's Office alleges the three were buying bomb-making supplies and scouting targets including a dam, fish hatchery, cellular towers, and forest genetics lab when they were arrested in Auburn earlier this month. If convicted, the maximum penalty under federal law for each offense is imprisonment for at least 5 but no more than 20 years, a fine of $250,000, and a 3-year term of supervised release. McDavid, Jensen, and Weiner are being held in the Sacramento County Jail. They will be in court again tomorrow for arraignment on the indictment. The judge in the case is also deciding on whether to issue bail in the case.
The U.S. Army has been overstretched nearly to a breaking point by frequent wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, risking collapse unless relief comes soon, according to a latest study commissioned by the Pentagon. The 136-page report, which is conducted by retired U.S. Army officer and military analyst Andrew Krepinovich under a Pentagon contract, concluded that the U.S. Army cannot sustain the pace of troop deployments to Iraq long enough to eradicate insurgency, according to U.S. media reports Wednesday. As evidence, Krepinovich points to the fact that the U.S. Army missed its recruiting goal for the first time since 1999 in the 2005 fiscal year that ended last September. The Pentagon has scrambled to offer much bigger enlistment bonuses and other incentives to make up the gap. The Krepinovich assessment is the latest in the debate over whether the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan have worn out the U.S. military, how the strains could be relieved, and whether the U.S. military is too burdened to defeat other threats. U.S. Congressman John Murtha, a Vietnam veteran, created a political storm last autumn when he called for an early exit from Iraq, arguing that the U.S. Army was, quote, broken, worn out, and fueling the insurgency by its mere presence.
A new audit of American financial practices in Iraq has uncovered irregularities, including millions of reconstruction dollars stuffed casually into footlockers and filing cabinets. An American soldier in the Philippines who gambled away cash belonging to her to their deaths in a rebuilt hospital elevator that had been improperly certified as safe. The audit, released yesterday by the Office of the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction, expands on its previous findings of fraud, incompetence, and confusion as the American occupation poured money into training and rebuilding programs in 2003 and 2004. More than 2,000 contracts, ranging in value from a few thousand dollars to more than half a million, totaling some $88 million in all, were examined by agents from the Inspector General's office. The report says that in some cases, the agents found clear indication of potential fraud and that investigations into those cases are continuing.
Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez said yesterday that President Bush was following in the tradition of such other wartime presidents as Abraham Lincoln, Woodrow Wilson, and Franklin D. Roosevelt when he ordered warrantless domestic wiretaps. The Attorney General's speech before Georgetown University law students, some of whom silently protested Gonzalez's appearance by turning their backs as he spoke, was part of an administration campaign to sway public opinion in favor of the spying program. Democratic critics of the program are expected to fire back tomorrow when the party's congressional leaders offer their prebuttal to Bush's State of the Union. Gonzalez will be the lead witness when the Senate Judiciary Committee opens hearings February 6 into the Bush-ordered program. He said the hearings will focus on whether Congress authorized the program and whether, as Bush claims, the president has the inherent power to order such snooping even if Congress didn't allow it.
The conservative activist who is waging a campaign against what he contends are UCLA's radical professors on Monday withdrew his offer to pay students bounties of up to $100 per class to provide information about their teachers, but he pledged to continue his effort with unpaid volunteers. The $100 offer enabled activist Andrew Jones to create a national media stir last week, but also drew heavy criticism from faculty who complained of a witch hunt. The furor prompted the resignation of several prominent members of his organization's advisory board. Jones, the president and sole employee of the fledgling Bruin Alumni Association, and a former leader of the student Bruin Republicans, said the payment offer had become a distraction from the real problem, which has been all along the issue of classroom indoctrination by UCLA professors, his words. Jones, who graduated from UCLA in 2003 with a political science degree, was known on campus for his aggressive tactics against affirmative action advocates, anti-war activists, and other liberals. After graduation, he was fired from at least two jobs, including one as a researcher for conservative activist David Horowitz.
The White House is crippling a Senate inquiry into the government's sluggish response to Hurricane Katrina by barring administration officials from answering questions and failing to hand over documents, senators leading the investigation said yesterday. In some cases, staff at the White House and other federal agencies have refused to be interviewed by congressional investigators, said the top Republican and Democrat on the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. In addition, agency officials won't answer seemingly innocuous questions about times and dates of meetings and telephone calls with the White House. The Senate inquiry is scheduled to conclude in March, with a report detailing steps the federal government took and didn't take to prepare for the August 29th storm. Investigators have interviewed more than 230 witnesses from federal, state, and local governments and the private sector.
With Senate math against them, Democrats see scant hope of blocking Judge Samuel Alito's rise to the Supreme Court, a final call made in caucus meeting today. But their push for a party-line vote on Alito signals another prize in this week's confirmation debate, a possible takeover of the Senate in next fall's elections. While liberal groups critical to the Democratic base are disappointed with the probable confirmation of Judge Alito, Democrats are eager to mount an aggressive rhetorical case heading into this week's final vote and coming midterm elections. Senator Leahy was one of 22 Democrats who voted to confirm John Roberts as Chief Justice in September. In a far more contentious confirmation, 11 Democrats voted with Republicans to confirm Clarence Thomas to the Supreme Court in 1991. The vote to confirm Alito is expected to draw even fewer Democratic votes. So far, the only Democrat to publicly back Alito is Senator Ben Nelson of Nebraska. Six Democrats who voted for Justice Roberts have already announced their opposition to Alito. In a week billed as a pre-buttle of the President's State of the Union address January 31st, Democrats are rallying around a few key themes: privacy rights, civil rights, and the dangers of unchecked presidential power.
The Texas prosecutor targeting Representative Tom DeLay has issued a second round of subpoenas to businessmen here seeking records surrounding donations to the former Republican leader and disgraced former Representative Randy Duke Cunningham. The subpoenas issued by Travis County District Attorney Ronnie Earls' Office Zero is on transactions in 2002 involving Perfect Wave Technologies, LLC, a company controlled by Brent Wilkes, a businessman with ties to DeLay and Cunningham. Wilkes' attorney has identified him as an unidentified co-conspirator of Cunningham, a California Republican who resigned from Congress after pleading guilty in November to accepting $2.4 million in bribes from defense contractors. DeLay, charged with conspiring to launder campaign money that was given in 2002 for legislative races in his home state of Texas, flew three times on a jet owned by another Wilkes company, according to campaign records. According to the subpoenas, businessman William B. Adams wrote a $40,000 check to Perfect Wave on September 18, 2002. 2 days later, Perfect Wave sent $15,000 to TRMPAC, the state's committee which spending is an issue in DeLay's criminal case. On October 3rd, Perfect Wave gave $25,000 to Tribute to Heroes, Cunningham's annual black tie charity gala in San Diego.
The United States has used the USA Patriot Act to improperly deny visas to foreign scholars critical of the Bush administration's foreign policy, the American Civil Liberties Union said in a lawsuit today. The civil rights group sued U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff and Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice on behalf of a Muslim scholar who was denied entry into the U.S., seeking to overturn as unconstitutional a provision of the USA Patriot Act used to deny his visa. Plaintiffs in the suit, filed in U.S. District Court in Manhattan, include Tariq Ramadan, 43, a Swiss theologian of Egyptian descent, often called Europe's best-known Muslim intellectual. Ramadan has condemned the use of violence in the name of Islam, but has for years been dogged by allegations from critics that he is an extremist despite his public pronouncements.
Nearly two-thirds of college students on American campuses have experienced sexual harassment, ranging from receiving pornography via email to groping, says a new study. The American Association of University Women Tuesday said most college students experience non-contact forms of harassment, jokes, gestures, or offensive remarks. But a third were physically intimidated, with abuse ranging from being touched inappropriately to being forced to perform sexual favors. Drawing the line sexual harassment on campus, a representative survey of 2,036 undergraduates in U.S. colleges and universities was based on confidential interviews with students, some of whom reported instances of being whistled at or catcalled on campus grounds. While others spoke of members of the opposite sex flashing at them, people spreading rumors about their sex life, and in one case strewing condoms in a dorm room. Compared to India especially, American universities have a sizable population of openly gay and lesbian students. The research also found that they were more vulnerable to harassment than heterosexual students, 71% to 63%, and were also more likely to be embarrassed, angry, afraid, and disappointed in their college experience because of it.
Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff said today that the United States opposes, in the strongest terms, a Mexican commission's plan to publish maps of the Arizona desert and distribute them to people crossing the border into the United States. The National Human Rights Commission, a Mexican government-funded agency with independent powers, has said it would distribute at least 70,000 maps showing highways, rescue beacons, and water tanks in the Arizona desert. The Mexican Human Rights Panel denies the maps will encourage illegal immigration. The commission said this week the maps would help guide those in trouble to find rescue beacons and areas with cell phone reception. The maps will also show the distance a person can walk in the desert in a single day. The commission will begin putting up the poster-sized maps in March in places where migrants will likely see them. Mexico was criticized last year for distributing a similar comic-style guide booklet. It warned of the perils of crossing illegally into the United States, while offering tips to stay safe.
A visiting hemp specialist from Finland says New Zealand should revisit its decision to make hemp growing and marijuana illegal and should not declare war on any plant. Jace Calloway says he is passionate about hemp and its health-giving properties, as well as its uses as a fiber plant. He is in New Zealand to look at hemp crops throughout the country, including the trial at Fielding, which is testing the eliphalosin absorption rate of the crop. Dr. Calloway, an associate professor at Kuopio University in Finland, says clinical studies on hemp oil show it clears eczema and is good for other skin complaints as well, as making hair thicker and fingernails harder. He says studies suggest people taking 1 or 2 tablespoons of the oil on a regular basis do not succumb to flu, as the oil seems to build up their immune systems. It is illegal to grow hemp in New Zealand unless it is licensed. Hemp is a low-THC variety of cannabis sativa, which means it has no mind-altering capabilities. Ministers in Australia and New Zealand recently voted unanimously to uphold the current situation which bans the use of hemp for human consumption.
Who knew that the gates of hell stood in Clintonville? Jim Willis did. Willis is one of the authors of Weird Ohio, the latest entry in a popular book series that has uncovered cursed roads, unfriendly ghosts, and off-the-beaten-track oddities in states throughout the nation. Willis became interested in bizarre phenomena while growing up in the Hudson Valley area of New York, which he characterizes as Sleepy Hollow, basically, Rip Van Winkle country. In 1999, after a move to the Columbus area, he founded Ghosts of Ohio, a paranormal research group. With his Weird Ohio co-authors, Andrew Henderson of Columbus and Lauren Coleman of New England, Willis spent about a year exploring oddities such as crop circles in the Miami Valley, a Loveland castle built by a conscientious objector, and stuffed albino animals at the Allen County Museum. Sections of the book are devoted to ghosts at Ohio colleges. Willis added, "I don't know for sure, but I think Ohio has the largest per capita number of headless motorcycle ghosts." He says so far no ghosts have pursued him, even when he visited the gates of hell.
West Virginia, which has one of the nation's worst obesity problems, is expanding a project that uses a video game to boost students' physical activity. All of the state's 157 middle schools are expecting to get the video game Dance Dance Revolution, and officials hope to put it in all 753 public schools within 3 years. A pilot project began in 20 schools last spring. Students 10 to 14 years old are being targeted first because it is a key point in children's development, said Lila Cardin, a professor at West Virginia University School of Physical Education in Morgantown. Game players move their feet on a special mat to correspond to arrows that scroll on a TV screen. The player must tap the same symbols on the mat at just the right time to do well. West Virginia is consistently among the top three states for obesity, with about a third of its residents considered obese and even more overweight, according to the State Bureau of Public Health.
Randy Britons have caused £350 million in damage a year thanks to energetic sex, a poll reveals. A third of couples broke something during coupling, and one in ten made insurance claims after trashing lamps, vases, beds, even pulling down curtains. 41% have suffered carpet burns, a third pulled their backs, and 12% twisted ankles or wrists. Saucy couples in the Southeast were the most accident-prone, while Yorkshire lovers put in the most claims for damage. The poll was conducted by an adult store chain called Ann Summers, which has 2,000 participants. And that's the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 25th, 2006. If you have any questions or comments about what you heard this evening, please call us at 503-231-8032 and leave a message on extension 203, or send an email to pmnews@kboo.org. You are listening to KBOO at 90.7 FM in Portland, in Corvallis at 100.7 FM on translator K264AA, and in Hood River at 91.9 FM on translator K220HR. You can log on to our website at kboo.fm. Our producer for tonight's newscast is myself. Our assistant producer is Steve Casburn. Tonight's audio editor is Rabia Yeaman. Special thanks to reporter Doug Geedy. Our engineer is Eduardo Delanderos Tierre. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. I'm Noah Eaton.
And I'm Brian Pritchett.